From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Rick Santorum made a cultural splash, lost big, spent his time in the political wilderness, but boy is he back, religious as ever, conservative as ever, but in a sweater vest now and giving Mitt Romney fits in the Republican primary race. A win in Iowa, a triple win in Colorado, Minnesota, Missouri, ahead in polls in Romney's stronghold, Michigan, tied or ahead in national polls. Talk about a comeback. This hour on Point, we're looking at Rick Santorum and his run for the GOP nomination. You can join the conversation. Did you see this coming? Rick Santorum, neck and neck for the Republican crown. Why is he gaining, and what would he mean as president? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK, and you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from Boise, Idaho, where Santorum held a big rally last night, is Nia Malika Henderson, national political reporter for The Washington Post. On the campaign trail with Rick Santorum. Nia Malika Henderson, welcome back to On Point.
Hey there, Tom. It's great to be here.
So what's the mood in the Santorum camp these days? It must be over the moon.
It is indeed over the moon. They had a huge rally last night, probably 3,000 people there. They had to have a huge overflow room because there were just that many people there. What you see from people who come to these rallies is that they love Rick Santorum, very much unlike the folks who show up at Mitt Romney's rallies, who, you know, are supportive but in some ways tepid. These folks who show up at Santorum's rallies, they press in to see him and get autographs and hand him crosses and ask him to pray for their family members. So there very much is a connection, and that is what Santorum has been riding high on. He's able to not only make these connections around social and religious issues, but also around blue-collar issues. He is very much casting himself as the blue-collar moralist of this race. He talks about revitalizing the manufacturing sector. He talks about having a program that is supply-side economics for the working man. He'll be today in North Dakota where he'll talk about revitalizing the energy sector, and he'll also be on Thursday in Michigan where, as you said, he is leading Mitt Romney in some of these polls. This is Mitt Romney's stomping ground where he grew up, where his father, of course, was governor, where he won in 2008, and now you have Santorum looking pretty strong there. He's up with a couple of ads already, again, casting himself as the person who is most likely to beat Obama because of his very bold conservative stance. And so now you have Mitt Romney, who's very much looking in his rear view mirror at an emboldened Santorum,
who's coming on like gangbusters. Triple win we saw before, and now, at least by one poll, up 15 points in Michigan. We'll see how that actually plays out. I've seen Rick Santorum campaigning, and he comes around, I wonder if he always does this, Nia, to a warning about the future of this country that is extremely dire in his stump speech, that it's, you know, save the country in this election or one more term for Obama and the America you know and love is gone.
Exactly. He does that at almost every stop. This idea that America, you know, is the shining city on the hill but could be dimmed and darkened if in fact Obama gets another term. There is, I think, in all of these speeches, whether it's from Santorum, Mitt Romney, or even Ron Paul, this idea of not only that America is on the cusp of gloom and doom, or if not already here, but also this a strain of nostalgia that says America's, you know, great heyday was somewhere in the past. And of course, you know, they talk about the Constitution, they talk about these founding documents and these founding fathers, but of course they sort of leave out that there was a great deal of struggle for many Americans to gain equality in this society, but there is a very much sort of looking backwards at America and this idea that they want to take the country back from the brink, which is where Obama, in their view, has brought the nation. And this resonates a great deal with a lot of these audiences, especially the audiences that I saw here in Idaho, and he was in Washington State on Monday. And there he was able to really get into another discussion about same-sex marriage. Of course, Washington on Monday became the seventh state to legalize same-sex marriage, and he is very much a big defender of what they call traditional marriage, and a lot of folks out there see him as the true conservative. They see Mitt Romney as somebody who has waffled on many issues, be it health care, be it climate change, be it sort of running to the left of Ted Kennedy in their eyes when he ran for Senate. They see in Santorum someone who has stood strong, who has always been there. And you saw Santorum when he was at CPAC, this conservative conference last week. He said to that audience that they knew him and that he knew them, and they had been toiling in the vineyard. And, of course, that's a line from
biblical.
The New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It's biblical. So again, he is coming off to a lot of folks as the only conservative in this race who could have a real bold contrast between Obama if he were to get this nomination.
God and religion, real front and center bedrock in the Santorum campaign. Here's a little tape, Nia, of him last week at an event, campaign event in Texas last Wednesday, saying that progressives and the Obama administration were trying to marginalize the role of faith in America. And you can listen here to just how starkly he puts it.
When you remove the pillar of God-given rights, then what's left is the French Revolution. What's left is a government that gives you rights. What's left are no unalienable rights. What's left is a government that will tell you who you are, what you'll do, and when you'll do it. What's left in France became the guillotine.
What's left is the guillotine if you go down this road. I mean, you can't put it starker than that. Off with their heads, Nia. Was that a special night, or is that familiar language?
That is familiar language. This whole idea that Obama and liberals and progressives, their ultimate goal is to control everyone and to curb rights, to have the government ultimately the arbiter of everything in society. He talked about the Declaration of Independence yesterday, and it said if Obama had been around, it would have been called the Declaration of Dependence. Of course, obviously, if Obama had been around at that point,
a lot of things would have been different.
Exactly.
Right. Does he have the money, the infrastructure? I mean, the Romney supporters are still saying, look, our man has got the stuff, the material to go the distance. Rick Santorum, for all this moment of appeal, we've seen others. He doesn't have the legs to go the distance. What do you think?
Well, I will say this. He has more money and more infrastructure than any of the other guys who, you know, the boom and bust cycle, whether it's Gingrich or Herman Cain mm-hmm. or any of these other guys. He's got a pretty smart campaign team around him. He's got this strategy now where he's out west, where he's trying to pick up some delegates with these caucus states. And, of course, we know that in caucus states, the real diehard conservatives show up, and that's why he was able to do so well last Tuesday in Missouri and in Minnesota, because those are, you know, caucusing states. Obviously, he didn't pick up any delegates from those, and they were non-binding.
Yep.
But that's what he's trying to do now. He's playing small ball. The other guys are swinging for the fences. He's playing small ball, trying to get these contests sewn up in advance of these other folks. Romney will be out in Boise, Idaho on Friday, of course. Again, he is seeing a strong Rick Santorum, and Rick Santorum says, well, sure, Mitt Romney has all of the money and all of the infrastructure, but that's not exactly an inspiring message. That's not a bumper sticker message. So he, over the last couple of days, after these wins that he had last Tuesday, mm-hmm. was able to rake in a bunch of money, $2 million over the course of 2 days. So he is doing well, and last night they were passing out the hat, and folks were going up and donating almost like it was the church offering.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been able to do well. The question, again, is how will he do in Arizona? How will he do in Michigan? There's a debate coming up next week. He has been pretty strong in these debates. Early on, you saw Santorum complaining about the limited time that he got in these debates. But as he has come on, and now he's a co-front runner in many ways, he's leading in Ohio in this
yep.
recent poll,
amazing.
That he will likely be, you know, standing next to Mitt Romney in this next debate, and he's been able to make a pretty good case in these debates about Mitt Romney, about the reason that Mitt Romney would not be a good nominee is because, in fact, he has changed his mind on a number of issues that are important to conservatives, and because of that, he can't be trusted to carry the conservative agenda to the White House. That is his essential argument, and I'm sure we'll see him make it over these next couple of days, certainly in this debate and certainly in these next contests in Michigan and Arizona and then on Super Tuesday.
And there's Rick Santorum just pushing it and pushing it. What about in the general election? I mean, we're looking at matchups there. that show, I don't know, this was CBS News saying Obama, Romney, Obama takes it by 6%, Obama Santorum, Obama takes it by 8%. I mean, that's now, that can change. It's changed already, but it puts, even there, it puts Rick Santorum within the same range, at least in those polls, as Mitt Romney.
It does. It, you know, his argument is that he, you know, that he could even be a stronger candidate against Barack Obama. But of course, in that poll, it shows, you know, that it's pretty close. You know, I think the issue is, and I asked him yesterday, I said, you know, he is very conservative. He lost big in Pennsylvania, I think by 18 points in 2006. Yep. He essentially says, well, that was a really tough year for Republicans. But I asked him, you know, you're pretty conservative. How does that, how would that play in a general election among independents, among folks in these suburbs who don't like the strident talk necessarily about abortion, about same-sex marriage? And he said, well, this isn't going to be an issues election. It's going to be a referendum on Obama. We need somebody who can make this a an election about Obama, who doesn't come with all the baggage. But in many ways, his baggage is these issues. His baggage is his stance that many people think is really far to the right, really radical, that I think that would indeed pose a problem for him in the general election.
Certainly, Rick Santorum comes with cultural issues, and from what you've seen, from what I've seen, he doesn't set him down at the campaign door. Nia Malika Henderson with The Washington Post, you're terrific. Thanks for joining us today from the campaign trail in Boise, Idaho, Nia.
All righty. Thank you, Tom. Take
thank
care.
You. Thank you. You too. We're talking this hour about Rick Santorum. You can join the conversation. What is behind the rise now of Rick Santorum? Is it Romney's weakness? Is it Santorum's strength? And who is the man in the sweater vest? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Rick Santorum, arch-conservative, faith and family man, now neck and neck with Mitt Romney for the GOP presidential nomination. You can join the conversation this hour. What do you think? Have you followed Rick Santorum's career? Does he speak to you? Who is the man in the sweater vest today? Do you remember when he was the club-swinging, brash conservative of the Senate? Is Rick Santorum too conservative to lead this country, or is he just what the GOP base, the Republican Party, really want right now? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. At a high-profile conservative CPAC conference over the weekend in Washington, Santorum, energized from his recent victory, shouted out questions to the conservative crowd.
Who has the boldest contrast? Who has the record that they can run on? Who has the bold plans to turn this economy around and to support the very institutions of our country that provide the foundation of our country, faith and family? Who has that strong track record and that contrast? Okay.
Who has that contrast? You. And I guess the implication there, not Mitt Romney. Now, Mitt Romney won the kind of straw poll that went on there. Rick Santorum has suggested, oh, maybe that was somehow rigged. Well, we'll see. It's the states that really count, and he's been winning them. We're going to hear in just a couple of minutes from big-time super PAC Santorum supporter Wyoming's Foster Freeze about why he's throwing money behind Rick Santorum. And we'll hear from a Republican analyst nervous about what Santorum would mean in the general election. But with us now from Philadelphia is Tom McGrath, editor-in-chief of Philadelphia Magazine. He's watched Rick Santorum and his political career for a long time. Tom McGrath, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
This message of apocalypse, if there's another Obama term, is one that he's been singing for a while. You heard it in South Carolina way back early before he'd even declared for the presidency, Tom.
That's right. I actually spent some time with him in South Carolina in the fall of 2010 when he was still investigating and, I guess, laying the groundwork for his current campaign run. And, you know, he was speaking at that point to small groups of fairly conservative Republicans. But he was saying much the same things he's saying right now in terms of, you know, this is the end of America as we know it if Barack Obama continues to be president.
People look at that epic loss that he suffered in Pennsylvania when he ran to regain his seat as or to keep his seat as U.S. senator and say, wow, you know, that's a big loss. How do you go from a loss that big to being back in play? What was that loss about, Tom?
Well, it is a pretty remarkable comeback. You know, Santorum has always been a fairly divisive figure in Pennsylvania politics. I mean, what he is now is what he's generally always been in terms of his conservatism. So that much hasn't changed. And obviously, you know, liberals in Pennsylvania and even to some extent moderates in Pennsylvania have always been uncomfortable with him. I think his loss in 2006 was really about the fact that he's right when he says that was a very tough year for Republicans. But I think by that point, a lot of people had started to look at him in Pennsylvania as something of a punchline. You know, that election took place, obviously, in the context of the Iraq War, which had become very unpopular by that point and which he continued to support. But it also took place after he had come out and made some comments about not just gay marriage, but about gay lifestyle in general and about the Supreme Court case when it came to sodomy laws. And he had uttered that famous comparison to, you know, man on dog.
If you let him do that, it would be gay sex. The next thing you know, any kind of sex, man dog sense.
Exactly. And I think in his mind, he was trying to make making a logical argument and a rhetorical argument. Mm-hmm. But certainly the way it played in the media, it just came across as kind of absurd. And I think there was a real change even among his base at that point that you know, his traditional appeal in Pennsylvania has been to conservative blue collar voters. And I think for a range of reasons by 2006 that he had really lost them.
We're going to go in just a second to Foster Freeze, who's throwing in behind Rick Santorum in a big way. A couple of callers here first, if you'd stand by there in Philadelphia, Tom McGrath. James in New York, Malone, New York. James, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Tom, for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I was calling in response to your show there. I am a Santorum supporter, and I believe as long as he stands firm on his beliefs, he's going to win, because it's a lot more of us out here than the commentators and intellectuals think.
When you say beliefs, James, do you mean his political beliefs, his religious beliefs, both?
Both. He's fiscal conservative and he's a social conservative. And as long as he stands firm on those issues, he's going to beat Romney.
Well, how about Mitt Romney? I mean, Mitt Romney says, I'm a conservative. We heard him in Washington just this last weekend saying, I'm as big a conservative as you're going to find.
Well, I can stand and tell you I'm a liberal. The biggest liberal you want to find, if you swallow that and voted me into office, that's your problem.
James, we got it. There's a vote for Santorum waiting to be cast, and I appreciate your call. One more right here. Norton, Virginia. Joe, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the polar opposite of your last caller in that. Right. I think Rick Santorum is one of the most terrifying individuals I've ever seen.
Why?
Well, you know, I'm from a pretty small southern town, and I have, you know, friends who are gay. And it's incredibly difficult in this area to live a lifestyle openly where you are a homosexual, because, you know, I see the people who are, you know, who have very strong bigotry against homosexuality. And, you know, for someone to actually say, a political candidate to say, you know, it's like man on dog sex, and, you know, and even not as necessarily about homosexuality, but that, you know, rape victims should make the best of a bad situation, you know, to say those things with a straight face, I think is absolutely terrifying. You know, and I don't think I've ever seen a pool of candidates so completely detached from reality.
Do you think he could take it in the general election? If he wins the Republican nomination, one way or another, do you think he could win with his conservative views in this moment in our political history, Joe?
I honestly don't know, but a part of me thinks that, yeah, he might be able to. Because, I mean, you know, like your commentators have said, you know, mm-hmm. he's gaining momentum in several places, and there are a lot of people that his sort of drivel appeals to, and that in and of itself is really scary too. So,
Joe, I appreciate your call very much, and we hear that no thanks in your corner for Rick Santorum's candidacy. Let's go to somebody who's a big backer of Rick Santorum right now. Tom McGrath with Philadelphia Magazine. Please stand by there in Philadelphia for just a second. I want to go to Jackson, Wyoming, And where we are joined, from where we're joined, by Foster Freeze, a major financial backer of the Red, White, and Blue Fund Super PAC, which has been supporting Rick Santorum. A big rich guy out in Wyoming who's made a big difference in the Santorum campaign and joins us right now. Foster Freeze, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. I'm honored that you'd invite me. Thank you so much. It's good to hear you.
It's good to have you on. Why have you thrown your bucks behind Rick Santorum?
Well, let me tell you two reasons why I haven't. One, he's a long-term friend, and when I first saw him speak, he just exuded authenticity. And as James said, you know, he sticks to his convictions, and he doesn't alter them. He's a man of conviction. And that's not why I support him, however. And I don't support him because I agree 100% with his policies, because I don't. I support him because I think he's got the best chance of beating President Obama come the fall because of the contrast that he has. For example, just on Obamacare alone, Rick was a fellow who a number of years back introduced the health savings accounts, which is the real panacea to reducing costs in health care. And so there's a magic contrast there. And he also is very strong on the national defense. People forget that he has been writing for 5 years about the connection between Ahmadinejad and Chavez and how they're creating all these bases of jihadists in South America. And so he understands the issues there, authored the Iran Freedom and Security Act, authored the Syrian Accountability Act, and has been a champion of Israel. And I think...
And he's very tough on Iran, of course. I mean, maybe the most bellicose in saying, drop the nuclear program or we're coming after it ourselves.
Well, I don't know if he's put in those words.
Pretty much.
But I think he agrees with all the Democrats on that score. That's one of the nice things about our country being unified, because Democrats and Republicans all agree that if Iran had a bomb, it would not be very healthy for Israel. So if you look to guys like Lieberman, and in fact, if you look at the Saudis, you remember there's this contrast between the Iranians, which are primarily Shiites that are in control, versus the Sunnis in Saudi Arabia. So we have kind of a friendship with the Saudis where they also are very paranoid about Iran getting a bomb, because it's different than Pakistan and India and all the other countries having a bomb, because most people in America don't understand the concept of the 12ers. And the people that control Iran now are part of this subsect of Shiite Islam, which believes that the 12th imam is hiding in a well near Qom. And in order for him to reappear, which is kind of like the second coming of Christ for them, that there must be complete chaos. And so these people believe they have a responsibility to bring chaos. So it's a very unusual situation.
Well, war with Iran could certainly be chaos. A nuclear weapon there, a lot of people fear chaos. Let me ask you, you made a pile of money as a mutual fund manager. That means you've got to kind of look long term here. When Rick Santorum, who you've put a lot of money behind now, says, you know, if Obama gets one more term, the country that we've known and loved is gone. Do you believe that?
Absolutely. We are at a point now, Tom, where we have a decision. Are we going to be a country governed by rules and regulations, or are we going to be inspired by values and virtues? After the earthquake, I went to Haiti, and all kinds of doctors on their own nickel were pouring down there to help their fellow man. They weren't there on government contracts. And if you remember the story of the Samaritan meets the Jew injured on the side of the road, picks him up, even though the Jews and the Samaritans did not like each other, takes him to the inn and says, you know, here's some money. You fix him up. If it's not enough, I'll pay you when I get back. Now we're transitioning to a period where the Samaritan sees a Jew by the side of the road. Says, oh, tough, tough shake. I'm so sorry you're injured. I'll meet you at the inn. There's a government worker 2 hours behind me. He'll pick you up and take you there. So I think Rick is absolutely right that this is a watershed moment, because if you've got the Supreme Court justices in play, and if President Obama gets elected, we're going to a more European model where the government tells us how we lead our lives. And this was best epitomized by this recent ruling where he told the Catholics how they have to manifest their religious convictions on contraception.
Yeah, Foster Freeze, I can see you are all over it. It's not surprising listening to you that you've got your money in Rick Santorum's Super PAC. Stand by there in Jackson, Wyoming for just a second. I want to get Raihan Salam in here, but also just a caller first. New Haven, Connecticut. Iris, you're on the air with Foster Freeze and Tom McGrath in Philadelphia. Hi, Iris.
Hi. You know, I called initially with an initial comment, but I just heard what that individual was saying.
Mr. Freeze,
regarding the government interfering in people's personal life. And what's interesting is it's okay as long as the government is interfering in a female's life regarding contraception and abortion. I mean, they're okay with government interfering as long as it's within their agenda. Is that correct?
Well, I mean, Rick Santorum has said that the government should support religious values. The government should be active in supporting religious values.
Right, but but he doesn't want the government being involved in anything.
Yeah, no, I hear you. We get the point, Iris. How do you think he'll do in a general election? How do you think Rick would do outside of the Republican primaries?
Rick Santorum will not win a general election. He is too radical. And now, I am a registered independent, and I'm a woman, and I work outside of the home, and I've raised two children. And I would not vote for Rick Santorum. Well, I did vote for George W. Bush.
Interesting. Iris, our time is so short. I've got it, but that's a very interesting sort of slicing of the assessment right there. I appreciate your call. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Foster Freeze in Wyoming, Tom McGrath in Philadelphia, please stand by. I want to welcome from New York City, Raihan Salam, into our conversation. Columnist for The Daily, lead writer of National Review's The Agenda blog, author with Ross Douthat of Grand New Party, How Republicans Can Win the Working Class and Save the American Dream. Raihan Salam, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Foster Freeze is stepping up big time behind Rick Santorum, and he's got a lot of momentum right now. Do you think he's the right guy for the GOP in 2012?
Well, Foster said something that I thought was very thoughtful, in which he said that, look, you know, the country, it's vital that we get a Republican elected in 2012. And the way that I see it is that, look, you know, you can't always guarantee victory. You have to look forward, and, you know, it's quite possible that Republicans might lose in 2012. And that's why I look back to 1964. There are a lot of folks on the right who see 1964 as ultimately a triumphant story when Barry Goldwater, the insurgent conservative, won the nomination. And even though he went down to a really dramatic defeat, a lot of folks on the right say, well, that was okay, because at the very least, it was something that demonstrated that conservatives could rally around a candidate and get him to the finishing point. Now, my concern is that after Goldwater's defeat in 1964, Republicans up and down the ticket in state legislative races, governor's races, all across the country fared very, very poorly. And in 1965, the next year, Democrats passed a little program called Medicare, a program that they assumed would they promised the country would be very cheap indeed, yet that wound up becoming so large and expensive that it's really transformed the shape of the federal government.
But, Ryan, you're assuming a Santorum loss, but a lot of Republicans, Foster Freeze included, are saying, no, this guy's the real deal. He's going to bring the energy that Republicans want now and that the nation will respond to.
This isn't about assuming a Republican loss. What it's saying is that, look, you have to accept that there is a possibility of a loss, and you have to accept that there's a possibility in some cases of a pretty big and significant loss. So the question is, what does that do to Republicans up and down the ticket? What does that do to our ability? Let's say, in an unfortunate scenario, Republicans do wind up losing. Will you have the forces? Will you have the legislators? Will you have enough folks in Congress to actually resist further encroachments of the federal government? And I think that that's the way that people ought to be thinking.
Hey, Tom McGrath, do you think Rick Santorum sees himself as a Barry Goldwater candidate out to fly the flag high for his ideals, but in the end not really electable?
Well, I mean, there's no question he's out to fly the flag high for his ideals. He's also a very astute politician. So, he understands politics very well. I don't think he's in this just to get his name out there and just to get his agenda out there. I assume that he's out there because he believes he can actually win. Now, he may be incorrect in that, but I would not doubt that he actually believes he can win.
Foster Freeze, are you putting your money on a symbolic gesture here?
Well, I'm putting my money, Tom, on a shoe-in. I can't believe people are going to vote again for Obama. I have so many of my Democratic friends who come up to me and apologize and said, you know, I see what you're talking about now. You know, look at the Chrysler deal where he just obliterated 200 years of bankruptcy law by giving it to the unions.
Well, George Bush came in to help get that started, and Chrysler's back in the black now, and there's people working in those jobs. I don't think Rick Santorum's going to dump too hard on that in Michigan in the next couple of days.
Well, I'm just talking about the arrogance of the Obama administration, where in April, for example, people don't realize Nancy Pelosi's district, which is 0.1% of the geographic area of the United States. In April, her district, high-end restaurants, had 20 80% of the health care waivers.
Hey, what about people who say Rick Santorum is arrogant in wanting to impose his religious views on the rest of the country, Mr. Freeze?
I think that's a very good point. And going back to Joe, is that when you see Rick interact with the demonstrators, and I'd encourage Joe to go listen to something called Rick Santorum on Faith. And there you see that he doesn't hate homosexuals. He loves all people.
Foster Freeze, we've got to hold it right there. We've got a break right in front of us. They're in Jackson, Wyoming, Raihan Salam in New York, Tom McGrath in Philadelphia. I'm Tom Asprick. We're talking about Rick Santorum. You can join us, 800-423-8255. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Asprick. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about Rick Santorum, arch-conservative, faith and family man, now neck and neck with Mitt Romney for the GOP presidential nomination. Triple win in Colorado, Minnesota, Missouri, and now looking forward to Michigan, where polls say he might take it. And that's a Romney stronghold, of course, and national polls showing him neck and neck, some even ahead, within a margin of error, but ahead of Mitt Romney nationally. With us this hour to look at this, Tom McGrath, editor-in-chief of Philadelphia Magazine. Of course, Rick Santorum, he was U.S. Senator from Senate, and Tom has written compellingly about him and his run-up to the presidential campaign. From Jackson, Wyoming, Foster Freeze is with us, a big backer of the Super PAC, that Red, White, and Blue Fund that is supporting Rick Santorum, a multimillionaire, and his money has been crucial at just the times when Rick Santorum needed it, and you're hearing today why he's put it there. From New York, Raihan Salam is with us, lead writer of National Review's The Agenda blog, columnist for The Daily. You can join us as well. I mean, is Rick Santorum the right guy for the GOP now? Is he too conservative for the general election? Is this the regular guy in the sweater vest who connects? And Republicans, who's really stronger against Obama? Where would, should Rick Santorum take this country? 800-423-TALK. Let's hear the man himself after big wins in Missouri and Minnesota. Colorado then. Last Tuesday, Rick Santorum emphasized the importance of the coming presidential election.
America's honor, your honor, is at stake. Go out and preserve the greatest country in the history of the world. Thank you all and God bless.
Your honor is at stake. Preserve the Republic. The day after those big wins, he talked at a chapel in McKinney, Texas, where he talked about his own faith.
I can't and I won't check my faith at the door, because it motivates me to do things that I believe are best for our country.
Will not check his faith at the door of the White House. Has given a big speech saying he's Catholic, of course, and saying that JFK, President Kennedy, was wrong to say in his speech in Texas that he would do some version of that. Of course, you know, who's checking and who's not? President Obama talking recently about how Christian faith, he says, motivates him in his policy decisions. Rick Santorum, very keen on talking about elites and who's telling whom to vote how. This was just yesterday at a rally in Boise, Idaho, said the Obama administration believes Americans are incapable of making their own decisions.
Don't you see how they see you? How they look down their nose at the average Americans. These elite snobs.
These elite snobs is how Rick Santorum put it. Lots of response online, Foster and Raihan and Tom. Here's a listener says, if people were more supportive of the Constitution, they would not fear the personal beliefs of someone like Santorum. This is free America, as envisioned. On the other hand, you've got Sean who writes, Rick Santorum, one word, dangerous. Two words, American Taliban. Axel from Pennsylvania, Santorum State, says, I just want to respond to one of the Rick Santorum clips played earlier. He claims that Barack Obama is out to tell you who you are, what you'll do, and when you'll do it. He says, I'm not sure Rick's capable of appreciating irony. Well, he's a smart guy, but it strikes me that this is precisely what Rick's campaign is actually about. Well, I guess telling you who you are, what you'll do. If you aren't white, Christian, heterosexual male, Alex in Pennsylvania writes, he wants to tell you how to behave and what to believe. Foster Freeze, what about that? I mean, people who don't necessarily share Rick Santorum's religion or his precise view on how to live, you know, worry about it when he says he's not going to check his religion on the door, and he thinks government does have a role in imposing values.
Well, Tom, that's a beautiful question, because you think President Obama doesn't checks his religion at the door? Every person that goes into Congress goes in with a set of values that's been part of their life. The good rule, you treat others as you want to be treated. That's part of people's religious belief system. So everybody brings their belief systems into the arena.
But they don't all go down to Texas to say JFK was wrong when he talked to the bishops and said he was going to separate his role as leader of this republic from his, from the, let's say, the hierarchy of the Catholic Church and too much influence there. Rick Santorum said that was wrong.
Yeah, I think the point Rick is making is, and if you look at Rick Santorum on faith, Google that. It's an 18-minute YouTube, and you'll understand that he prays for those that persecute him in Matthew 5. By living out the Christian faith, this is basically a Christian nation. Harry Truman's 5 times read the Bible before he's president, and he said, in our great country has been proven the fundamental unity between Christianity and democracy. 83% of Americans identify as Christians. And why are those Christian values important? Because partly it says we are our brother's keeper. You know, the whole idea is health care right. That doesn't have to come up, Tom, because health care is responsibility. And we know that if some illegal alien gets run over by a bus, he's taken to the hospital.
We got 50 million people without health insurance in this country in the last decade.
Well, Tom, it's going to get worse because make sure your listeners understand there's a vast difference between health insurance and health care. I'll never forget seeing a young fellow on TV saying, I was rescued from a hotel fire, had $1 million of health care bills, and I had no insurance. Why wasn't the spin that, hey, I had no health insurance, but I got health care?
Yeah, well, we know the problems that has caused in people who have gone without, but your point's taken, Foster. Tom McGrath, you know the record of this man. What do you think he really means when he talks about taking his faith, which he's very, Foster Freeze is right. Lots of people have religious faith that they carry with them to the White House, but few have been as outspoken in putting their faith front and center as Rick Santorum. What does it mean in his actual making of policy? Decide. How do you imagine it would work out in the White House if he ended up there?
It's called honesty and authenticity.
I think,
Tom McGrath?
Well, I think that the Texas piece that you alluded to is really important because he, in many ways, Santorum is the inverse of JFK, our only Catholic president. First of all, from what we know, I mean, he is actually sort of seems to walk the walk when it comes to his own way he lives his own life. But beyond that, you're right. He is very much unapologetic about the fact that there should be more faith in our public discourse.
He said that creationism should be taught in public schools back when No Child Left Behind was being put together. Do you think he'd still champion that in the White House? Intelligent design?
It's possible that he would. You know, in many ways, the key to understanding Santorum, I think, is to understand that he's very, very uncomfortable with the trajectory of the world over the last 50 years. He's uncomfortable with what's happened to the family. He's uncomfortable with what's happened to the role of the federal government. He's uncomfortable with the rise of secularism. And in many ways, all of his policies and flow from that worldview. He's a guy who, as far as I know, still attends not just Mass, but goes to a Latin Mass. He's very uncomfortable with what's happened to the world since the early 1960s.
Rayhan Salam, what does that mean in a campaign? What would it mean in a presidency?
Well, it's very hard to say because, one can run a certain way in a presidential campaign and then govern in a quite different way.
But we've seen him as a senator.
We have, Tom. But I mean to stress that we don't necessarily know how one will govern. What we do know from his past record and from his past campaigns is that there are a couple of things that might concern Republican primary voters. One of them is that, for example, in 2000, in a successful race versus Ron Klink, a kind of somewhat culturally conservative Democratic figure in Pennsylvania, from Western Pennsylvania, Rick Santorum fared very, very poorly with female voters. Even in a year when he won, there was a very big and significant gender gap between how men and women reacted to Santorum. Now, one could say, well, that's because of Santorum's stance on abortion rights, but that's not quite right because women and men, their views, track fairly closely
so
with regard to abortion rights.
So what is it then, do you think? What is it?
Well, it's very hard to say. But if I were a Republican primary voter thinking hard about this coming election, I would think about the broader landscape. I would think about which voters are swing voters in America. Now, some of those swing voters are folks who are culturally conservative, who fared poorly in the economy since the crisis, and who might gravitate towards someone like Rick Santorum, emphasis on might. There's another constituency of swing voters, and these are somewhat socially liberal or socially moderate suburbanites who are middle or upper class, who haven't fared all that poorly since the crisis, but who might be frustrated with President Obama. And the question is there a Republican candidate who can appeal to both of those constituencies, and is that candidate Rick Santorum.
Do you need
and
them
I
both to win,
I think that you do need them both to win. Mm-hmm. I absolutely think that you need them both to win, in part because of where those voters are situated, in which states are likely to determine the outcome of the next presidential election. And I fear, Rick Santorum's sake, that he would have a very hard time indeed appealing to some of those voters in the latter category.
Let's go to Santorum's home state of Pennsylvania and Joe in Pittsburgh. Joe, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yes, this guy's an Eddie Haskell. He likes to talk up front and he hides his shallow and sneaky character, and I can give an example how. When he ran against Doug Walgren, one of our Harvard graduate congressmen who had two young kids and lived in Virginia, he ran against him saying he lives in Virginia because he wanted to be with his kids. But Santorum used that against him to become elected to Congress. As soon as he was elected to the Senate, Santorum ended up having his kids live in Virginia instead of Pennsylvania.
But I don't think that's going to get in the way of his presidential run.
Well,
do you, Joe? I mean,
he didn't use the cyber school in Pennsylvania in an empty house to claim to get him into the cyber school.
But what about Rick Santorum as a president, Joe?
Salary.
Yeah, we take it. We get your point. I mean, there's a lot of hypocrisy in politics, but he's playing in the real big league now. What if he wins it? What do you see?
I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to see a person that talks to you just like Eddie Haskell did.
He talked. And leave it to Beaver, meaning what?
Because on adults, but in behind the scenes, he's a whole different guy, and that's why he lost by 18% in this state.
Jerry in Brattleboro, Vermont. Jerry, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you, Tom. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm really, really concerned about this. I'm so sick and tired of being dictated to as a 71-year-old Catholic, and I think Foster Free should join the Peace Corps and get a life. I'm sick and tired of people that have so much money to get so much recognition and seem to be those that are always being called upon for their puny opinions.
Why, if you're a Catholic, why wouldn't you like a Catholic president of the White House who's very firm
because
in that faith,
I
in his view?
All you're doing is bringing up religion, and you're starting the same thing what we all fought for, to leave Europe and leave the rest of the world, to come to the United States for freedom and freedoms. So we're going back, and Santorum will return back to the revolutionary days in Europe, medieval, if not. I mean, to me, he's a scary guy, and church has nothing to do with this presidential election. It's separation of church and state.
Okay, we take your point. We'll look at it. Jerry, I appreciate your call as well. We're talking about Rick Santorum with Raihan Salam, Foster Freeze, and Tom McGrath of the Philadelphia Magazine. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Tom McGrath, I'll come first to you. Rick Santorum is very clear in saying that he wants faith and family back at the middle of this society, this culture. He says explicitly that our economy will not recover until we do. He looks at family breakdown and cultural breakdown and says, you've got to put these back together or this economy doesn't work. But then you hear, you know, our Catholic caller in Vermont saying, look, I'm 71. I've been around. I don't want to be told this puts us back in sort of old days of Europe. Why we left? What does Rick do with... Now, with this country, which has both a religious and a very strong secular tradition, Tom?
Well, that's a tough divide for him to sort of pull together. And I think one of the for the surge that he's having, I think one of the big handicaps Santorum has, and this may speak to the earlier point about appealing to women voters in some extent, is in contrast to Ronald Reagan, who was as optimistic as a person could be, and I think that helped make him appealing politically. Mm-hmm. Santorum is an inherently pessimistic person, I think, or a negative person.
Apocalyptic fear or view, you mean, that side?
Exactly. And I think that certainly has some appeal to a certain segment of voters. But I think generally that's a pretty tough sell in order to get yourself all the way to the White House.
Foster Freeze, what do you think on that point? There's a kind of negativity built into that very frightened view of where we're headed.
You sure don't see that when you travel with him. I travel with him a couple days in Iowa and a couple days in Missouri, and he's just such an uplifting friend guy, fun guy, and his staff around him. It's a joyful group of people who believe they're doing something good for the country. And getting back to the idea of faith in the economy, you know, if you look at what causes poverty, Brookings Institute, it mentioned that the poverty level is like only 2% if you do three things. One, you complete your high school education. Two, you work, and three, you get married before you have a kid. The poverty rate on that those three criteria is like maybe 2-3%.
Of course, cause and effect, you can debate all day, but I take your point there. I've got a listener here saying Santorum's appeal seems to be his sincerity. And this listener says, I abhor his politics, but I respect him more than I do Romney because Santorum seems to believe what he says. Now, this listener goes on to say, however vitriolic or provincial or vile, Rayhan Salam, we had a guest on the other day who said he's the most integrated personality on the campaign trail right now. That sincerity is a fuel cell for Rick Santorum, Rayhan.
Oh, I think that it partly is the conviction of a convert. When you hear about Rick Santorum's early life, he was someone who had worked for John Hines, a famously moderate Republican senator in Pennsylvania, and he was someone who did not have a very strong religious convictions either, yet that's something that he discovered somewhat later in life, and that has really infused his public life in some ways that I think are very admirable indeed. But I think that the question is whether or not he is able to reach this relatively small and shrinking but nevertheless all-important cadre of swing voters. And that is why I think that, you know, despite his admirable conviction, the thing is that a lot of Americans actually have fairly muddled views. A lot of Americans actually like the idea that, well, you know, this person might have convictions different from mine, but I can tolerate her or him because, well, this person is sufficiently pragmatic and flexible on the issues. And I think that there is a concern that Senator Santorum, former Senator Santorum, by virtue of his very strong convictions, might not have that pragmatism and flexibility that will allow him to encounter new circumstances and pivot and shift as necessary.
One more listener, Elaine in Whitman, Massachusetts. Elaine, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Great show. Thank you for having my call.
Thank you.
I'm calling because I'm listening to Rick Santorum, and I'm listening to him running on faith and traditional values.
Yeah.
And in my experience, I know that faith and traditional values cannot get you the White House alone. As many people are only lightly Christian or agnostic in this country, we cannot have a president or a presidential candidate getting into the White House and just pushing his religious values on everyone else. Obama has run his campaign thus far pretty much leaving religion out, and we don't need an oppression of a too much religion in the White House.
Elaine, we've got it. Foster Free's a question for you. Sheldon Adelson, who's put a lot of money behind Newt Gingrich, said, oh, well, I'm for him, but if it doesn't work out, I will swing my financial support to Mitt Romney. Will you do that if Rick Santorum doesn't make it into the final round here, Mr. Freeze?
Well, I respect Newt Gingrich and Romney both. They're really national treasures. But I think the point Elaine made is worth commenting on, where Obama is imposing his religion on us in terms of saying that everybody has to embrace his ideas about contraception. And so the whole notion is, let's let everybody decide for themselves. Contraception is such an inexpensive part of the health care cost. People can basically afford that, and if they can't, they can get it through some kind of a welfare program.
Is Rick Santorum willing to let everybody decide themselves on contraception? He's been very, very tough on different kinds of contraception.
You know, that's exactly right. I mean, someone said that he wanted to ban contraception, and I think what Rick Freedom is about, what Rick Santorum is about, and again, go back to Rick Santorum on faith, and you'll see that he wants to bring us freedom that we are losing, where the government is imposing a religion on us. We have to embrace homosexuality, or we're ostracized. Jim Dobson can't say some things about the biblical perspective.
But Rick Santorum does and can. Foster Freeze, it's so great to have you. We're out of time. Thanks for joining us from Jackson, Wyoming. Rayhan Salam from The Daily and Tom McGrath, editor-in-chief of Philadelphia Magazine. Thanks to all three. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.